let's go back to the question.
You bet.
So Wallace asks about three possible translations of assunto, which are issue, matter, and topic.
Yeah.
And how would he know which one to use? I mean, how would you differentiate?
Okay. No, it's good. This is where, like, English teachers would say that you can break this down. You can categorize this into register. I like to call it levels of formality. So really, you could break it down. You could categorize it into levels of formality. So it depends on the context. Topic is more semi-formal or familiar, while the next one, matter, is a little more formal. And then issue, which is an American pronunciation, issue, which is British, would be the most formal of the three. So, yeah.
Issue would be the most formal.
Yeah, yeah. This is a very, so you would hear that, like, you know, like maybe politicians saying, well, this is a very pressing issue, and we will try to resolve it as soon as possible. It's a pressing matter, not too far off. And then, yeah, pressing topic, well, yeah.
What would you say if, let's say, we were discussing the agenda for a meeting? Which one would you use? Like, we have five possible, topics or issues?
Yeah, I think I would say topic.
Okay. All right. Let's take a look at another one. We have a question sent by Thiago. He asks about this or that. He says, he mentioned a podcast that I did a while ago, and I talked about this expression, that ship has sailed. You know, and he's asking, why isn't it this ship has sailed? And, well, he mentions that he's not talking only about this expression, but in general. Maybe that's because it's very common to teach that, you know, if you're talking about something that is near you, you use this. And if it's something that is far from you, you use that. So why wouldn't you say this ship has sailed?
So exactly. So it's a question of distance in terms of an objective sense. So this would be closer to you, and then that would be further away from you. So, I mean, yeah, I mean, if you said that ship has sailed and this ship has sailed, in a subjective sense, I guess you could use both. And I guess that's the question he's asking. Now, if you're referring to the physically to the ship, and you said this ship has sailed, it's almost like you're pointing to the picture. Like you have a representation of the ship close to you, so that you can exemplify it, so that you can show it. And the same thing, that ship has sailed. So maybe the picture is further away from you on the wall, and you're saying that ship has sailed. I guess that would be one way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this and that. I mean, the truth is, you cannot, how do you say this? You cannot always fit, yeah, that and this into those little book rules.
Yeah, I think so too.
Yeah, we say stuff like, okay, that's it for today. Why did I say that and not this? You know, but maybe that ship has sailed and this ship has sailed. Maybe if it's something that that's happening in that moment.
Yeah.
Maybe you would say this ship has sailed. Maybe if you're referring to something, I don't know, that happened a while ago and that you were still expecting some result from.
Right.
Say, okay, that ship.
Yeah. On like an objective level, definitely we can follow the rule of proximity. And then, as you said, sometimes we use it in a subjective sense, like this is it, that's it. That's a great idea. This is a great idea.
Right.
I'm sorry, but there's really no grammar rule to that. You're just going to have to use what I call the soundometer. Like, you're just going to have to do what sounds right, you know. It's like prepositions. Like, is there a rule for prepositions, you know?
Yeah, people try to say that there are.
Yeah, I tried that in a video explaining that, and it works on a physical level.
Okay, let's take a look at another one. Ailton sent a question about conditionals. He says, I really would like to hear more about conditionals, like, if I had something, I would have something else.
Yeah.
So what would you like to say about that, Steve?
Okay, so I'm scrolling down to Ayutthaya's scrolling up. Oh, yeah, I've got it here. A lot of my students, even my advanced students, sometimes will get that mixed up. And I think, you know, it's really important to remember some kind of a basic structure. He's asking about conditional to, right? And it's important to remember the basic structure for conditional to, which is if plus the simple past, which he has done, if I had, and then the rest of the first sentence. So, for example, if I had a million reais, and then comma, I would, could, might. You want to use some modal like would, could, or might, plus the simple form of the verb. I would buy. I don't know. What would you buy with a million reais?
A million reais. I would buy a sports car or a really big apartment by the beach.
Oh, nice!
Actually, I would travel around the world. That's what I would do.
Awesome, awesome. So Ayutthaya, you can see some great examples, some heartfelt examples here from Anna, giving an example of conditional to, which is your question on how to make a conditional to. I just released a video on that. I have to forward you the link because I explain how to use conditional to like that. I think that probably people get confused. I think even Americans get confused with this. I've seen this happening too, where sometimes they will use the incorrect constructions for conditional clause. Yeah. So I can imagine as a non-native speaker, you know, it's like, who do you follow? But that's a basic structure there. For my question to you is, what would you do if you saw a UFO flying over your house, Ayutthaya? What would you do?
Wow, I don't know. What would you do, Steve?
Oh, that's a very good question. I think that I would ask them to identify themselves first and say.
Oh, you mean if they had started a conversation?
Yeah.
Oh, okay, that's different. I thought you were saying, you know, if you only saw them flying. Okay.
I'd grab a camera, I think.
Would you ask them for a ride somewhere?
Would I ask them for a ride somewhere? I think it would really depend who they were. I don't think I would just, you know, go with anybody. Yeah.
Right. If they were the extraterrestrials you're used to talking, like that you're friends with, then you would go for a ride.
Yeah. If they were
complete strangers, then you would just say no, thanks.
Oh yeah, We learned that as children. Don't talk to strangers. So.
Okay. If they were your friendly neighborhood extraterrestrials, then okay.
For sure. Take me to your peppy planet.
That's a good theme for a future video, Steve.
Awesome. Parallel 2.
Okay. Danubia has a question, another question about pronunciation. She's asking, how do you pronounce A and N? These are the indefinite articles.
Yeah, that's a good question. Now that you're reading the question out loud, it makes more sense to me what she's asking. Because I've had some students ask me this before. Like, sometimes people will say A, and sometimes people will say A, particularly for that one. We use both. I think that probably using A sounds more posh. It sounds a little bit more academic, more formal. But most people, you know, like in a day-to-day conversation would say, you know, they just say, right?
Mm-hmm.
Another thing that I wanted to mention is, you know, be careful of irregularities with indefinite articles. You know, those exceptions that I'm sure I've seen you post on your blog before where you would have irregularities with the first letter of the noun. So university.
Okay.
The predominant sound is actually the N, and so therefore we say university, because it's just impossible to say an university. Hour, the H is silent, so we say an hour. So you can think about those exceptions too, in terms of articles and pronunciation.
Are you familiar with ESL Pod by Dr. Jeff McQuillan?
No, I'm not.
it's a really popular website. The URL is eslpod.com. I think it's one of the most popular podcasts for English learners on the net. He's been online for maybe 4 or 5, 6 years. And I remember listening to one of his podcasts, and someone sent a question I think was similar to what the Nubia was asking. He made a comment about how sometimes when someone wants to emphasize that, for example, they did not see that girl, they saw a girl, and they say a to emphasize that they saw, you know, some girl, a girl, not the girl you were thinking about. No, a girl.
Yeah, definitely. It's more eloquent. It sounds nicer, and it's a way to embellish. Yeah, definitely.
All right. Let's see what else do we have. So Barbara sent a question. How can I say os olhos da cara?
And that would be like something. Yeah, like you could say, for example, in North America, it'd be very common to say my new car cost an arm and a leg. Be careful that cost is an irregular verb, cost, like in the present, the past, and the past participle. Another one is that in the UK, they would say it costs the earth. And that's the way that...
Really?
Yeah, that would be more what they would say in the UK. I'm sure that they might say it costs an arm and a leg as well, but when something costs the earth, like that's not something we would use here in North America. But it would be one. An equivalent that they would use in the United Kingdom. So you might say Janet Middleton, Prince William's fiance, has an engagement ring that must have cost the earth, or it must have cost an arm and a leg, because it was Princess Diana's engagement ring. So, full of diamonds and sapphire.
I saw a picture. So in both expressions, we use body parts, right?
That's right.
It's different.
Yeah. And that thing about costing the eyes of the face is used like in all the romantic languages. It must have come from, you know, Latin or something, because I know the Italians use it, the French
really?
Use it, Spanish use it. Yeah.
How about we talk about Caroline's question? What's the meaning of spoiler and guilty pleasure?
Okay. From what I gather from spoiler could be something which spoils the surprise. That's a real spoiler. It spoils the surprise. It spoils it for everybody.